So a couple of weeks ago, as you know, we had our annual Labor Day retreat over at Mount Cross. It was the hottest weekend, whether you went or not, that I've experienced since I lived in Las Vegas. Whew. And because of the heat, we were especially challenged by the theme of the weekend, joy in the journey. It's hard to talk about joy when there's 108 degrees and hot wind blowing on you. I'm just saying. But we managed to get through. And that theme was chosen because of our theme verse. The joy of the Lord is your strength. And the reason that verse kind of came into play for us, and just kind of walk us down a little bit of memory lane here, is it became evident to me in my studies that our joy here at Bethel is expressed in how we do church together. Meaning that if joy were a fountain, there would be five jets in which we would see that express joy. And you know this well, but just to make sure we're all on the same page, we talk about hospitality, the joy of welcoming others, possibly strangers. The joy of Christ-centered community, the joy of knowing others and getting to know others, and the joy of knowing God. That's what we do here in worship and in the time of fellowship we have. Spiritual growth, the joy of getting to know God and God's will better. Responding to the needs of others, the joy of connecting to others in times of need. And then finally, generosity, the joy of sharing what we have with God and with others. So this is how we collectively express joy, but we were at the retreat, and something happened. And if you weren't there, that's why I'm talking about this. I'm catching everybody up. The more we talked about joy on Saturday and Sunday, the less certain we became about what joy actually is. It was kind of interesting. It seemed like the more we talked about it, the less we understood it. And some of you, if you attended on Saturday or Sunday, you know what I'm talking about. So I want to circle back to something I actually said here from the pulpit back on April 29th. So I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. And it was this: joy is not circumstantial. Happiness is. Joy is internal and is not event-driven. Happiness can be elusive because it is always dependent upon someone or something else happening. Joy doesn't need an event. It only needs two things. It needs you, and it requires love. Now, I know it's hard to remember something that I said that far back in April, which is probably a good thing, because it's hard to hold things against me if you can't remember what I said. So I think that's okay. I don't mind reminding you about the good things. But let me be clear. We're not demonizing happiness. I mean, we want good things to happen in our lives. We want happiness as an emotion when it accompanies good things. So there's nothing wrong with happiness. But what happens when there are a lack of positive events in your life? There is less happiness, right? And to some degree, happiness can be elusive. If you don't have the optimal circumstances, happiness may or may not happen. But the contrast is, joy isn't like that at all. It's internal. It is not circumstantial, and it's actually possible to have joy when you're not happy. It sounds contradictory, but I'll get there. I mean, you might even say to yourself, well, how on earth can someone be joyful if you're not happy? Well, the secret of joy that I shared with a very few amount of people on Monday of Labor Day retreat, so there was just a few of us left, and I did a little bit of talking on it, and this is what I shared with everybody. Joy is found in the who, not the what. For lack of a better word, delight is found in our connection with others and not the circumstances that may or may not swirl around any relationship that we have at any given moment. It's about the who, not about what's going on. And so Jesus himself actually gives us a clear picture of how we understand joy and how we can have it, not happiness, but joy. You heard a little bit, Dave was reading, we have Jesus at the Last Supper. It is the final dinner that he will have with his disciples before he is arrested and killed. He knows that. The disciples still don't have a clue. And it is as if in this section of John, many chapters, Jesus is giving his final instructions to his disciples, knowing that his end was coming. And in the midst of all this teaching, as if Jesus said, now here are the final things, I don't want you to miss this, he says this: as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love, and if you obey my commands, you will remain in my love. And just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. So what we see here is that joy has its origins in love. And love is the foundation of relationships. Oh, okay. So joy is connected to love, and love obviously is connected to how we have relationships. So he tells the disciples, he said, look, after I'm gone, you should remain, that is, continue to be present in, be held, be kept in, continually stay in my love. And he says, the way to stay in my love or to be bathed in my love is to follow him. You know, the word obey, you can see it there, carries a lot of baggage for Christians. And a lot of the Christian community kind of uses this as a prop up for legalism. So I don't have time to talk about that today. But an equally acceptable translation from the Greek, which this is originally came from, would be to hold fast instead of obey. So he says, to be present in my love at all times, hold fast to my precepts. Because there's going to be a time when I'm not physically present. So hold fast to my precepts, and you'll be present in my love. And you say, well, hold on, Pastor Ben. The word is commands. Well, it's interesting to note, once again, the choices people make when translating the Bible, we could also use the word precept. You know what precept means? A general rule intended to regulate behavior or thought. A general rule, not a specific rule, not a bunch of rules, not a list of rules. A general rule. So when we think of the word commands, well, you know, what do we think? We think rules, we think commandments, and Jesus isn't even talking about that at this point. Jesus is talking about a general rule, and of course we'd add a general rule of thumb. Well, what is it? Why are you being so elusive here? Well, Jesus clarifies in the very next verse. In verse 12, this is what he says. My command, not plural, my precept is this. Love each other as I've loved you. Notice not a bunch of commandments, not a bunch of rules. A general rule of thumb is just love people. Come on, Jesus, you're making this way too easy. And he says, by doing that, by following this one precept, this general rule of just love people the way I've loved you, that's what he's saying. He says, this is the result. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. All in John chapter 15. It's all right there. So there is joy to be found in relationships that we have. And our joy may be full to the brim if we love people. And it's not just other people, but also being receptive to the love that God is giving us. So this is how this is all connected. So you might be wondering, you say, okay, how do I have joy? You mentioned this earlier. How do you have joy when things are falling apart? How do I have joy when life is not good? I mean, think about it this way. If you have a friend who's having a difficult time, for whatever reason, and you are there to support them and walk with them, and even though the situation is terrible or no good or horrible or whatever use you want to use in this case, but you're there to support them, the situation may be bad, but there is a joy, a satisfaction in being able to be present with them. It doesn't make you happy, but there's a certain amount of joy in saying, this person isn't going to walk alone, and I'm going to make sure of that. Or if the shoe's on the other foot. If you're going through a difficult patch in your life for whatever reason, aren't you joyful when you know that you're not alone and that other people surround you with love and support and prayer, even though the situation is terrible? That's what we're talking about. It's the who, not the what. Because joy is not happiness, and therefore is absolutely true that you can have joy in dark times, and you're not even happy. Now, you add to that, that's just people to people. I mean, you add to the fact that we're never beyond God's reach, which is a wonderful thing. Jesus understands suffering in hard times. He gets it. He's gone through it. Imagine that. He not only sympathizes with pain, he gets it because he experienced it. So he empathizes too. He's there. And there is joy to be found when you realize that you're never, ever alone. Oh. So, of course, joy is always found and strengthened in connection to one another. So, loving a person or being loved only increases the joy because it is the knowledge of knowing that someone has your back, including God has your back. So with that being said, it stands to reason that the opposite of joy is not sadness at all. It's hate. Hate separates. Hate breaks relationships. In hate, there is no relationship and no possibility of having one. But the problem with this is that hate is powerful. Hate and its cousin fear are very powerful things that you think might unify you to other people if you hate the same thing. But eventually that hate turns on each other. See, the only future that hate has is isolation where joy is absent. So it just makes me think of a joyful moment I had this past week. It's insignificant, but it brought me joy, and I just want to share it with you. So it's Wednesday night. I have finished the book that I was reading because I flew home Thursday. I was in Indianapolis with my wife. It was the Zoo and Aquarium conference that she attends. And the final evening, there's always like a banquet, dinner, drinks, all that kind of thing as like a goodbye end of conference thing. And it's always held at the zoo or aquarium that is hosting the event. It happens every year. So I finish the book. She says, let's go to this closing event. And so I go to this social gathering in the evening at the end of the conference. Like I said, dinner and drinks. And what I'm about to tell you sounds like the beginning of a bad joke. But honest to God, it happened. A Lutheran pastor, a married gay man, and a Muslim meet each other in front of the bar and start talking. I kid you not. And guess what? We laughed, we talked, we shared, we found common ground. That was it. That was it. That's all that happened. There was a connection made. There was a safe place. It was always safe for me because of who I am. I'm safe. But it was safe for them, and we shared life for just a little bit of time. And guess what? That brought me joy. Sometimes we are surprised at the places that Jesus shows up and he is present with us, full of love, and wants us to be filled with joy and to share that love and joy with others. And in that moment, It was there, and it's insignificant, and maybe they don't even remember it, but I do. I am struck by the words of a guy named Elihu, who spoke to Job of the Old Testament, trying to correct Job's bad theology. And he says this to Job: "For God does speak, now one way, now another, though a person may not perceive it." Meaning, God speaks and connects us in ways that we don't even recognize that the presence of God is there, but God is there. And even sometimes happens even within hard times. And I ran across the story of a Lutheran this past week, an ELCA Lutheran from Texas, who picked up a hitchhiker on the side of the road. Now, I don't recommend this, but he did. And a matter of fact, even this guy, Stephen Lee, he said that, and I asked him if I could share this story, and he said yes. He said that this guy actually looked dangerous, but before his brain could engage, his foot was hitting the brake. So his body reacted before his mind could, and he picked up this hitchhiker. And all of a sudden, he's taking him to the train station in, of all places, College Station, Texas. And the guy sitting next to him was disheveled. He was a mess. His name was Daniel. He was different. He did not have social graces. The way he reacted and responded to things was weird. He was jittery, head full of energy. For a little bit, the guy who picked him up thought he might be high on something. But as he was watching him, he said, no, he definitely wasn't, but he was just an odd duck. And Stephen said he was like patting himself on the back for being such a, you know, good Samaritan, for being a good guy and picking this guy up. But all of a sudden, Daniel started talking about God. He brought up God before even Stephen could, being a Lutheran, because, you know, we love to talk about God to strangers, right? And this is what Daniel said to him, odd duck. He said, God told me you were going to pick me up today. And Stephen was like, me? You mean me specifically? And he said, no, just a guy with a beard and rosy cheeks. That's all I got from upstairs. Stephen has a beard and rosy cheeks. He was surprised, to say the least. And then Daniel kept talking on the way to the train station all about the times that God had been with him throughout his horrible, hard life. Sleeping in a box, laying out during a windstorm with nowhere to go, yet God, he said, was always with him. And he came to realize, Stephen, as he was listening to him, that even though Daniel's life was terrible and much worse than his would ever be, his faith was blazing, it was strong, it was full of joy, yet his circumstances were terrible. And Stephen says he was humbled and inspired by the stories that this odd duck hitchhiker named Daniel told him. And it just reminds me, Daniel, this goofy hitchhiker, has joy because he's connected to God. Even though his life is hard, Stephen, the guy who drove him, found that out too. There is joy in the journey, especially when we are connected to one another and to God, no matter the circumstances. Amen.